Questions on anything? So we got everyone enjoyed that quiz so much that you wanted to have another one. So we got a quiz on Thursday on momentum conservation. If you think about it, we've got a big bunch of stuff that we've covered recently. And it's been suggested that maybe we should have kind of a halfway through help session as opposed to a help session just before the exam.
Yeah.
What day would be a good, so basically now is a good time. So in the immediate future, what date time would be good? Suggest something. Seven is, I mean, that's not a problem for me. So the problem is we're coming to the end of the week, right? So is Thursday at 8, Friday at 8, Saturday at 8, are those realistic possibilities?
We're preferring not Friday or Saturday.
Friday we have lab.
Yeah, Friday we have lab.
Thursday could be
Thursday.
So you think Thursday night is the best candidate time? Sunday is pretty much dead out for me. Saturdays are okay. So we'll talk about it Thursday, but probably some particular time Thursday night then. 8? 7? Does it? 7 is earlier is a little bit better than later, huh?
Yeah.
Not any earlier than 7.
Say again?
Yeah.
Not any earlier than 7.
Because practice won't be done until 7. Questions? So, I don't know, that's a candidate time, and I bet it'll be the final time, but it's a reasonably good guess. So, last chapter, we were looking at works and kinetic energy. In this chapter, we're looking at impulses and momentum, and they're kind of similar but different. So remember that work was the area under a force versus distance curve, and the work gave you the change in the kinetic energy. So now we have the impulse is the area under the force versus time curve, and the impulse gives you the change in the momentum, where the momentum is just mass times velocity. So there's probably more similarity than difference. It is important to recognize that momentum is a vector, whereas energy is not a vector. So every once in a while, we have two-dimensional problems with momentum. In the case of energy, if we didn't have any non-conservative forces, if friction wasn't present, then the energy was conserved. So we could write equations that the initial energy is the final energy. If there are no external forces, then we can write the equation that momentum is conserved. And we defined, typically that's going to be a collision sort of situation where we have big forces between the two objects, but no external forces. So collisions are going to play kind of a big role in this chapter. We define collisions where the two things stick together as totally inelastic. And we talked about the possibility of having collisions that conserved kinetic energy and momentum. And we gave those the name perfectly elastic collisions. Does that remind anyone of questions?
I'm just kind of confused, like, I don't know if, like, how do you know when you need to use, like, the momentum equation versus, like when they ask for velocity, how do you know to use momentum rather than, like, energy?
Yeah, so that's a tough question. So I can tell you that in order to have momentum being conserved, there have to be no external forces. So typically then we're thinking about situations where, you know, Abraxas is jumping on the canoe and we say that water friction is being neglected or other friction is being neglected. But that sounds a lot like the conditions for conservation of energy, where absence of frictional forces. And the two get mixed in and wished together into all sorts of different ways. So I give you the following examples, which are intended to confuse you, which may be bad. So I'm sure you've all ridden your bikes, and you have the experience that pretty much can go around a corner without losing much speed. Is that an example of conservation of energy or momentum? Energy. Not momentum, even though usually people would say that's momentum, but the momentum has changed tremendously because it's a vector. It's changed from going this way to going that way. And there had to be an external force on you pushing you around in a circle in order to change that momentum. But that force wasn't doing work. Basically, because there wasn't any sliding. When you roll your bike, there isn't any kinetic friction, it's all static friction, and that can't do any work because there's no relative motion between the two. So what I'm telling you is that I'm not surprised you're confused, that conservation of energy and conservation of momentum are different but occur in kind of similar situations. So perfect examples of when you see changes in obvious changes in speed, you know, like Tarzan going on the rope or things sliding down, those are going to be occasions for conservation of energy, where you're seeing potential energy converted into kinetic energy. Whereas typically, momentum conservation problems are going to involve the word collision. They don't have to.
Change in direction.
Yeah. Well, you'll see more examples, I guess. But technically, no external forces means momentum is going to be conserved. And no non-conservative forces means energy is going to be conserved. And it's not impossible to have both, which is would be, for example, a perfectly elastic collision. More questions that I don't answer. Good. So let's take a look at this possibility of a totally elastic collision and what the corresponding equations are going to be. So we're thinking about a situation where in the initial state I have two particles of mass m1 and mass m2 and they have some corresponding velocities which are subscripted initial in 1 and 2. And in the final situation, I still have those same masses, but I have changed velocities, final velocities. And I'm going to conserve momentum and energy and see what we can say about how the final state depends on the initial state.
So are the two particles having at each other?
Not necessarily. Right, so one of the problems we'll talk about in a minute is where a car rear ends a truck. So they're both moving at some speed and there's in the same direction, but the car is going to collide with the truck while it's moving. Okay, so with that notation in mind, in terms of momentum conservation, the initial momentum is going to be the initial velocities and masses combined. And the final momentum is going to look a whole lot the same, except with some Fs. And in terms of kinetic energy, we have pretty similar sort of equations, except we have 1/2 mv squared. So I have my initial velocity squared, and in a typical sort of problem, we would know the masses and we'd know the initial situation and we'd be trying to calculate the final velocities. So it's two equations and two unknowns, right? The unknowns being the final velocities of the particles. And generally speaking, two equations and two unknowns is good. You should be able to solve it. But quadratics are a lot trickier than linear equations. So what we like to do at the start is to show you a trick where we can convert this quadratic equation into a corresponding linear equation. And that'll hopefully make the solving of them easier. Question or?
No.
No. Okay, so what follows is just a trick. And in the end, we'll come up with a linear equation, which is going to be a lot easier to deal with than this quadratic equation. So the trick is to put all of the ones on one side of the equation and all of the twos on the other side of the equation. So currently, we put the initial and the final on different sides, which I hope makes sense. But instead, I'm going to put the ones and the twos on different sides of the equation. And I might as well, at the same time, multiply everything through by 2 to get rid of those 1 halves. So if I do that, I've got this term here, my initial velocity squared. This one here, a number 1, wants to come over onto this side of the equation, so it's going to be minus v1 final squared. And here we have a 2. And here we have our 2 that's on the wrong side of the equation, so I'm going to bring it over also. Right, so I've got all the 2s on one side of the equation and all the 1s on the other side of the equation. And what turns out to be good about this is that we have a difference of squares. And that factors, right? So in general, a squared minus b squared is a plus b times a minus b. So that means we can factor this term. It's the same thing as the sum of those velocities times the difference of those velocities. And notice that this is initial minus final. On the other hand, this one is going to be final minus initial after I get through the sum. Okay, so factoring is good, and remembering that factoring is kind of the equivalent of solving the quadratic equation. And that's basically what we're going to do with one proviso. Let's do the same trick with the momentum equation. Let's put all of the ones on one side of the equation and all of the twos on the other side of the equation. I'm going to write that down here, I guess, instead of up there. So here I have a 1. I want to bring it over to this side of the equation. And here I have a 2, I want to bring it to the other side of the equation. And if you look carefully, these terms are exactly the same. And these terms are exactly the same. So if I divide those equations by each other, I get a huge cancellation. And I get a simple linear equation instead of a quadratic equation. And you can put that in a box if you want, but usually people put back the initial and the final on either side of the equation. So I'm going to bring this initial back to this side of the equation. So I'm going to have 1 minus 2 initial, 2 final, minus v1 final. So instead of using that quadratic equation for conservation of energy, we can use that linear equation along with momentum conservation in order to solve our problems. So, I don't know. I think it's pretty clear that linear is going to be easier than quadratic, but let's take a look at kind of a standard example. Let's assume that this guy is initially at rest. So I'm throwing a target particle at an at rest particle, and I'm interested in what the final situation is. So if I write down momentum conservation, it's going to be m1 v1 initial plus 0, because the other particle isn't moving. That has to be equal to m1 v1 final plus m2 v2 final. If we think about it, there's just one initial velocity. So just to save writing, let's just call that capital V. in terms of the relative velocity equation, so I have v for my initial velocity of particle 1, I have 0 for my initial velocity of particle 2, and that all has to equal v2 final minus v1 final. So now I got two equations and two unknowns to solve. Let me just rewrite it a little bit down here, over here. So we've got m1 times v is equal to m1 v1 final plus m2 v2 final, and I've got v is equal to v2 final minus v1 final. In this equation? So how could it cancel out? Because it's not a common term. So I'm wondering if this isn't your question, because there are no masses here. But
okay. I'm just confused as to like what that even means.
So this is momentum conservation.
Okay.
So this is the initial momentum just in particle one, and this is the final momentum that is in both particles. So to me, this is the very surprising equation. No masses. It came from that real complicated quadratic equation, and it's super simple in comparison. So it seems like we got a huge benefit by doing it this way. More questions? Okay, two equations and two unknowns. You can kind of take your pick as to what your favorite way of solving it. My favorite way of solving it is to arrange it so that the coefficients in front of one of the unknown terms are equal and opposite. And then I can add and they'll disappear. In the past, we often had t and minus t and it happened automatically. Here, in order to make these two equations cancel, I need to multiply this whole guy by m1. So let me do that. So I'm going to just recopy the top equation. I'm going to multiply this whole equation through by m1. So this is m1 v2 and now if I just add, I've arranged it so that those two guys will cancel. And these two guys both involve v2 final, so they're going to add. And these things are just going to add. So my final story then is that the final velocity of the hit particle is twice the mass of the target particle divided by the total mass times the initial speed of the thrown particle. So that's only half the solution. I'm also interested in this velocity. So to get that one, I need to make these two guys cancel out. So in order to do that, I'm going to multiply that whole bottom equation by m2. So let's recopying just the first equation. So that's m1v is the final momentum. And I'm just multiplying this guy by m2. So it's m2v1 final. So I've made the coefficients equal, but they're not opposite. So I need to subtract those whole two equations. So v is a common factor, so this is going to give me m1 minus m2 times v. These guys have canceled out. These guys will add. So the final velocity of the initially moving particle depends on the difference in mass divided by the total mass times the initial speed. I don't know, so there's algebra. Does it kind of make sense? So one very common situation is where we have equal mass particles that are colliding. So say a proton is hitting a proton. If that's the case, then we're going to have exactly the same thing subtracting each other. So the final velocity of the moving proton is going to be zero. Here we're going to get 2m over 2m, so the final velocity of the hit particle is going to be v. So it's going to be total velocity transfer between the initially moving particle and the initial stationary particle. Okay, so here's kind of a standard setup for that. We have equal balls that are supposed to be lined up in a line. They're not exactly. When I raise this thing up on the side, I give it lots of potential energy. And like the Tarzan problem, when it comes down, it's going to convert that potential energy to kinetic energy. And then there'll be a collision right here between two equal mass guys. And what'll happen is this guy will be at rest, and this guy will pick up all of that speed. A millisecond after that, this guy is going to hit this guy. And there'll be full velocity transfer. This guy will end up at rest, and this guy will have the speed that this guy had initially. And so it goes until this last collision, where this guy is going to hit this guy, he's going to go at rest, and this guy is going to have whatever speed this guy had initially. So it's going to go up to the same initial height and come back down and repeat the process. Now, that would be the case if these were perfectly elastic collisions, but the fact that you can hear it means that there's some energy converted to sound, so we're going to have some sort of decay as opposed to having the thing go on forever. Okay, we can do a little bit better job of equal mass collisions on the air track. So these are two equally massed guys. I can have this one, well, maybe it's not exactly level. They're going in opposite directions, so it must be bowed. Okay. So I can have approximately equal mass collisions. And this guy's pretty much at rest afterward. Okay? So yes?
So then, is this an example of when we need both, like, an energy and a momentum?
Yep, so we started out with momentum conservation and energy conservation.
Okay, and then can we simply use that equation, the one boxed, for...
Yeah, so this boxed equation is a forever equation. If you really wanted to, you could start with kinetic energy conservation, but boy, it's a mess. So it's hugely, so even though these are the two fundamental equations, these are the two that you're going to use. Okay, so, yes?
So we can't use that for inelastic, right?
Correct. But inelastic are even easier. Because in inelastic collisions, they stick together. So momentum conservation by itself tells you everything, right? So we have some initial momentum. In the final situation, we have two things that are stuck together. And so we can immediately find v if we know the initial velocities. So inelastic collisions are the easy case. Okay, so if a proton hits a carbon atom, so that's the situation where M2 is bigger than M1. Okay, so we can make this guy be the massive guy. Can't make him 12 times heavier, but I can make him a little bit heavier. So now if we have a collision, you can see that that guy goes forward and the original original moving particle is moving backwards. And you can see that here, the final velocity of the target particle is some positive number, but here we're going to get a negative number for the final velocity of the proton. And of course, vice versa, if a carbon atom is going to hit a proton, they're both going to end up moving forward. Okay? It's mesmerizing, huh?
How does it work with pool then? When does it feel like it's a ball in different spots?
So those are two-dimensional collisions, and it's not fundamentally different. That is to say, we're going to be conserving momentum, but now in the x and y directions.
Oh.
So Yeah, so in terms, so kind of a standard example where we have the cue ball that's going to hit the other ball, you know that, you know, they might end up going kind of like that. So now we would have an initial momentum vector, and they all have the same mass, so we might as well include that, is going to be the final momentum . And since the masses actually cancel, if we put the initial velocity vector there, then these two guys have to add up in terms of velocities. Like that. So it's a standard proof. I'm not sure I'll bother to go through it, is that this has to be, in the case of a perfectly elastic collision with no spin, that has to be a right angle. So it's a standard thing when you're playing pool to look at, if you want this ball to go into the pocket, you want to make sure that at right angles to it, there isn't a pocket that's going to eat your cue ball.
But like I know you can hit the cue ball, so the cue ball, like as soon as it hits the other ball, stays stationary. The other one.
If you have a head-on collision like this,
yeah.
So as long as things are in a line, then we're back in this case. So when we have an equal mass collision, it's going to end up at rest. And with spin, you can do more complicated things, right?
All right, okay.
Right? You can make them collide and actually come backwards because of the spin. More questions? Okay, so let's take a look at some of the problems. So in the first problem, we've got kind of a standard conservation of momentum problem where this car is going to run into a truck. We know there's going to be crumpled fenders, so we know that energy isn't going to be conserved. So this is a problem that just is going to involve conservation of momentum. There are going to be big internal forces as the sheet metal crumples, but there aren't going to be any external forces that are on the situation.
So what was the reason why we know it's not energy? How do we know in this case that we get the momentum?
In that case?
Yeah.
Because they're crumpled fenders, right? Takes energy to deform sheet metal. So energy is going to be used up. Well, I say used up, converted to heat. In that process. And I think if we read it, it actually says that the collision doesn't conserve energy. In fact, part B says how much mechanical energy is lost. So it's pretty straightforward that it is going to be lost. Okay, so initial momentum equals final momentum. That's going to be the case. So if we call M1 the mass of the car, we have M1 times its initial velocity plus the mass of the truck times its initial velocity. That has to be the mass of the car times its final velocity and the mass of the truck times its final velocity. And in this problem, they tell us that M1 is 1.2 metric tons and M2 is 9 metric tons. And they tell us the initial speeds. This thing is moving at 25 meters a second. This thing is slower so that it can be, we can have the collision. It's moving at 20 meters a second. And the car is certainly going to be slowed down by this collision. It's only going to be moving 18 meters a second. And we're supposed to find the final velocity. So we know everything in this equation except V2 final. So it's mostly just a plug and chug sort of problem. So if we bring this term over to this side of the equation, we have the initial momentum less the momentum that's in the car post-collision divided by the mass of the truck. That has to be the final velocity of the truck. So the mass of the car is 1.2 metric tons, and its initial speed is 25 meters a second. The mass of the truck is 9 metric tons, times its initial speed, which is 20, subtract off the final momentum that's in the car. It's only moving 18 meters a second post-collision, and divide by the mass of the truck, and we're supposed to get out the final velocity of the truck. I don't notice, just from a calculator point of view, that everything had this 1,000 in it, so I can just cancel that out, and in my calculator I just have to enter the base numbers as opposed to the enter exponent 3. It has to be that the truck is going to go faster post-collision, right? It's been pushed forward, so we're expecting that this final velocity is going to be a little bit more than 20. So we got 1.2, 25, and 9, and 20. Oops. And we've got 1.2 and 18. And let me try it again. 1.2, 25, 9, 20. Ah, I hit my calculator key twice. 1.2, 25. 1.2, 25 times 9, enter, 20 plus. And then we've got my 1.2 and my 18. Yes, and I get 20.9 meters per second. How much energy is lost in the collision? Well, energy is just 1/2 mv squared. So I'm going to want to have change in kinetic energy is final minus initial. So the final kinetic energy is the car, which is now moving at 18 meters a second, and the truck, which is now moving at 20.9, and the initial was the car moving at 25, and the truck moving at 20. And we're fully expecting that the loss of kinetic energy is going to be, that we're going to get a negative number because fenders were crunched in this. And we've got the 20.9. And then we've got the 25. And the 20. And what I get is minus 8.68 times 10 to the 3. What? 8.68 times 10 to the 3 what? Joules. Yeah. If we're unsure about that, we could go through the units. Right? So we have kilograms times meters per second squared. So if we pull out one of those meters, we get a Newton meter, and a Newton meter is a joule. Okay. So 44 involves vectors. So we have a two-dimensional, not a collision, but an explosion. So we have a spacecraft that's going to break apart into three pieces, and we're supposed to figure out what's happening. So M1, which weighs 48 kilograms, is going to move purely in the x direction at 12 meters a second. M2, which weighs 62 kilograms, is going to move at an angle of 105 degrees, and it's going to move at 15 meters a second. And I hope it's clear that it all has to add up to zero, so the missing piece has to kind of go like that. We're supposed to figure out what that angle is precisely. And it weighs 112 kilograms. Now, of course, the explosion involves tremendous internal forces between the pieces. But internal forces are fine, right? It's external forces that rule out conservation of momentum. So we know that momentum is going to be conserved. And before the explosion, the whole thing was sitting at rest. So the initial momentum is zero. And the final momentum then, all of the momentum of all of these pieces, it has to add up to zero. And we can just deal with that in terms of x and y components. So it's easy for P1, right? It has no y component of momentum, and it has an x component that is the mass times the speed. For P2, I would say we're talking magic button, right? Because this thing has a hypotenuse that is 62 times 15 at an angle of 105 degrees. So I should be able to figure out its x and y components just by hitting the magic button. If you don't like your magic button, you can just break it up into components like this and think about the corresponding triangle. I hope it's clear that the x component is negative and the y component is going to be positive. And since this has to add up to 180 degrees, that has to be 75 degrees. So this x component, for example, has to be the hypotenuse, 62 times 15, times the cosine of 75 degrees, and then put in the minus sign by hand because you can see it's going that way. And this y component is going to be 62 times 15 times the sine of 75 degrees. But I'm going to push the magic button instead in order to get, hopefully, the same answer. Okay, so I've got 62 times 15, and I've got an angle of 105 degrees, and my button says that this thing is minus 240.7 and a y component that is 89. Something's not happy here. Let me try it again. So I've got 62 times 15 and 105 degrees. Okay, I guess I'm happy with that. 898. Yep. I think I may have missed the decimal point in the last class. So if these things add up to zero, that means that the momentum of the missing piece has to be minus the sum of P1 and P2. So all I need to do is to add the x components, add the y components, and then put in my minus sign, and I'm going to get the result. Well, the y component I can do because I have to just add zero to it. And the x component, I might as well use my calculator on. So we've got 12 times 48. And what I get is 335. So that makes sense. It's got a negative x component and it's got a negative y component. And for me, I can just push the magic button and get what that angle is for free. Okay. And what I get is this thing is overall 959 at an angle of minus 110 degrees. But if you don't like the magic button, you can work it out directly, right? If we know what the x and y components are, right? So we know that this x in terms of distances is 335. And we know that this y component is 898. And so this angle is going to be the inverse tangent of the opposite over the adjacent. Questions? Shouldn't make you feel bad by saying that's one of the easier ones. Okay, so for this one here, we have frictionless sliding. So that's an immediate tip-off that we're going to be using some conservation of energy. And then it has an elastic collision. So there we know we're going to also have conservation of energy. And then these things are going to slide back up. So kind of the story is that we start both of these things 5 meters high. This one weighs 2 kilograms. This one weighs 4 kilograms. They're going to slide down, converting their gravitational potential energy into kinetic energy. We're going to have a collision here on the flat. And with their new velocities, they're going to go up the slide to reach some maximum heights. And we're supposed to calculate those maximum heights. Okay, so this one weighs 2 and this one weighs 4. Which one's moving faster when they have their collision? 2? Four? So if I have a 2 kilogram container and a 4 kilogram container and I drop them, which one hits the ground first?
The same.
The same. Right? That's Galileo. Right? How does that work? Well, so let's just work out one of these pieces. So we have an object, and I'm just going to label it M, that has an initial height, but no initial velocity. So its initial energy is no kinetic energy plus mgh. When it reaches the flat, it's at a height of 0, but it's got some kinetic energy. And the initial energy has to equal the final energy because this is a frictionless surface. So we get that mgh wants to equal 1/2 mv squared. You can see the masses cancel. So right before this collision, they're both going to have equal and opposite velocities that we could calculate from that equation. Okay, so here's the situation. We've got M2, which weighs 4 kilograms, and M1, which weighs 2 kilograms, and they have opposing velocities kind of like that, where this velocity solving this equation is the square root of 2gh. So now we've got an elastic collision to calculate, and it's not the one we worked out in detail. This is the case where the one we worked out in detail had one at rest. Here they both have equal but opposite speeds, so we have to work this out from the start. So the initial momentum is going to be the mass of the first one times its speed, and I'll just use v for its speed because They're moving at the same speed, plus the mass of the second one times its velocity, which is minus v. And that has to equal the final momentum like that. We could write down conservation of energy, but we know that that's a mess. So we prefer to write down the equation that was right there that said something like v1 initial minus v2 initial has to be v2 final minus v1 final. So notice that final initial 1, 2, 2, 1. So under these circumstances, this one is plus v, right? It's moving this way. This one is minus v, and we don't know what those are. They are unknowns. So minus and minus is plus, so that's equal to 2v. And we can factor out the velocity here, so this is going to be m1 minus m2 times v. Let's just recopy our equations. So momentum conservation looks like this. And energy conservation in this much happier form looks like that. And we need to find the final velocities of these two guys. I think it's perfectly clear that this guy, the light one, is going to have a big bounce. To me, it's less than perfectly clear what happens to M2. Does it go forward or back?
Why did you write the M1 minus M2V before that top equation?
All I did is factor, right? Common term of V. Okay, so my way of solving these is to try and get equal but opposite coefficients. So I claim I want to multiply that whole bottom equation by m1. And then I will achieve my goal of having things that'll cancel. So let's just recopy the top equation. Top equation is momentum conservation, and multiply the whole bottom equation by m1. So that's m1v2 final minus m1v1 final. And I arrange that so that if I just add these guys cancel out. So I've got one M1 and two more. That gives me three M1. And I've got minus one M2. All times V. And here, I've just got the total mass multiplied by V2. So the final result then is that V2 is equal to 3 times the mass of the first one minus the mass of it divided by the total mass. And I at least couldn't tell you whether M2 is going to bounce back or whether it was going to go forward. And it totally depends on whether it's more or less than 3 times the mass of the other particle. This V,
yeah.
It got dropped.
Oh, okay.
And I remind you that V is this thing here. The velocity they had from the slide. Okay?
So the V is the velocity in the kinetic energy equation, or no?
So the velocity is how fast they're going because they have converted gravitational potential energy into kinetic energy. And they both have fallen the same distance, so they both end up with the same speed, just in opposite directions. So in this case, if we plug in numbers, this thing is 2 and this thing is 4. So we have 6 minus 4 is 2 divided by 6. So it's 1/3 V. So that's a positive number. So that tells us that this guy is going to slowly be going back up the way it came. If it weighed more, if it weighed 10 times what M1 weighed, then it would be going forward. Okay, so that's half the problem. What's the velocity of number one? Well, I want to get equal and opposite coefficients in front of those two guys. So I'm going to want to multiply this whole equation by M2. So let's do that over here. Let's just recopy the first equation. So we have the difference in masses times V is equal to the final momentum. And we multiply that bottom equation through by M2. And I wasn't able to get equal and opposite coefficients here, so I'm going to want to subtract these guys. So I have minus 1 here, and I'm going to subtract another 2, so that's going to give me less 3 M2s. These guys are going to cancel now. These guys are going to add. So my final result then for it is the final velocity of the light particle is m1 less 3 times the mass of the other guy divided by the total mass all times v. So in terms of numbers, we have 2 minus 12, so that's minus 10, 6 of the velocity. So that's a negative number, and it's a big negative number, more than 100%. So it's going to be going back up fast that way. Well, you might hope that we're done, but we're not, because the problem didn't ask us for any of that. Well, actually it did. So it did ask us for these velocities, but the final question is actually to figure out how high they go post-collision. And that doesn't sound as hard as maybe you're thinking, because we still have this equation that relates heights and speeds. If you throw a ball up at a certain speed, you know how high it's going to go by using conservation of energy. So the height of one of these guys is going to be the initial velocity squared divided by 2g. So the height of 2, we just have to put in its velocity. Right? So we're going to get 1/3 squared of v squared over 2g. And if you think way back to the original thing, v squared over 2g was equal to 5 meters. That happens pretty fast. So we figured out the original V by saying that it was what you get when you fall 5 meters. So V squared over 2G is exactly equal to 5 meters. We don't need to recalculate it. So the heavy one is going to go 1/9 as far up as it started. The light one, so that's minus 10/6 or 5/3, I guess. So that's 25/9 of 5 meters. That's how high it's going to go. So it's going to go 2.5 times higher than it started post-collision. Okay, so this thing looks kind of like this. Right? This guy doesn't go up as high on that side, the other guy goes way higher. Well, we got the same problem made more easily done. You can test this yourself. So the plan is to drop simultaneously right on top of each other, perfectly aligned, a basketball and a tennis ball. And what's going to happen, of course, is they're going to fall together. Even though they have different masses, they have the same speed. And the basketball is obviously going to hit the ground. And if we assume a perfectly elastic collision, its velocity is going to be exactly reversed. So then we're going to have a collision between this upward moving basketball, which has some speed v, and this downward going tennis ball, which also has speed v. And we know what the result of that collision is, right? The light guy ends up going at that speed, ends up going faster than it was going before the collision, going upwards. So let's just kind of not plugging in the numbers from the problem. But if we think about the tennis ball as being weighing nothing in comparison to the basketball, right, so it basically weighs zero, then the final velocity of the tennis ball is going to be three times the velocity that it had before the collision in the other direction. And so it's going to end up going nine times as high as it started. So if you drop this from 1 meter, it's going to go 9 meters high. It's going to hit the ceiling. Would you have predicted that?
What?
Would you have predicted that?
No. So if we had a basketball and a tennis ball right now, we dropped it.
So if we had balls, so the hard thing of doing this is to get them exactly aligned. In this case, there's a rod that keeps them aligned. But I'm going to drop this thing, and we're going to have a collision here. It's going to cause a collision there. Going to cause a collision here, and that one can come off. These guys can't come off, so I don't have to. I only have to find one ball after I drop it.
And that one's going to hit the ceiling?
This one is going to whiz around. I can't actually usually drop it very straight, so usually it'll whiz off one of these other walls. But typically it's moving so fast you can't see it. So look carefully. Ah. I told you I couldn't drop it straight. Let me get far enough away from things. So I don't know why it's hard to drop straight. Jeez. I did much better in the previous class. So it's a little bit bent, I guess. I wonder if that's... Did hit the ceiling. So you believe it?
Prediction successful.
Prediction successful. But no applause. I guess it was the third try, so applause isn't exactly required. No. Anybody see where it went? Am I getting warmer? I see it. Well, so what am I? I'm batting 250. That's pretty good for dropping something. Okay. No.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Oh, well. It works every time if you drop it right. So let's take a look at some iQuiz questions. So, is it possible for a stationary object that is struck by a moving object to have a final momentum larger than the initial momentum of the incoming object? I'm really disappointed. You all got it. This is designed to fool you, right? I mean, the obvious answer is B, that momentum is conserved, but it's the wrong answer, right? If you think about what happens if you throw, say, a golf ball at a bowling ball, what's going to happen mostly is the golf ball is going to end up with reversed velocity. So we end up with initial momentum of mv. This guy has minus mv, so this guy has to have 2mv so that it still adds up to what it was originally. So the bowling ball can have more momentum than the incoming ball. Okay, so make it more complicated. How about energy? So a golf ball is fired at a bowling ball, bounces back elastically. Which one has the most momentum and kinetic energy? So compared to the bowling ball, the golf ball has what? So we know that it has less momentum, right? We already answered that question. So we're into C and D. I'm fooling some of you, but not the majority. So we've said that the bowling ball has twice the momentum and hugely more mass. So the kinetic energy of it is going to be, using the different formula, it's going to be its momentum squared divided by its mass. Whereas for just the tennis ball, it's going to be its momentum squared divided by its mass. So we have more or less the same momentum, but we've got hugely more mass for the bowling ball. So the bowling ball is going to have less kinetic energy, which means the golf ball is going to have lots of kinetic energy, so we're into D. Okay, so this is one from an old exam. We've got two guys that are going to push off against each other. So student A is the heavy student, student B is the lighter student, and we're interested in A, B, C, or D. Now, should I feel happy or sad when I fool you? That's majority right. It's majority right. So this is Newton's third law, right? Object A pushes on object B equally and oppositely. So however hard A pushes on B, exactly equally B pushes back on A. So we're into D. Okay, that's the easy part. So, compare the momenta and the velocity of these guys after the push. People are hoping that the horn goes off. So this is a conservation of momentum problem. So they started with zero momentum, so they're going to have equal and opposite momentum post-explosion. So we're into B and C as possibilities, equal momenta. So if they have equal momenta, the one that has the smallest mass is going to have the biggest velocity, right? Because they have to multiply together to give the same thing. So we're into C. Okay, so quiz next week on next Thursday on momentum conservation. Maybe some sort of help session, 7-ish on Thursday night, to be discussed. Hey. Acceptable.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
So to figure out the new height, what am I missing when we go, like,
yeah.
This like has nothing to do with it apparently, or what is going
no,
on?
No, it has lots to do with it.
I'm missing whatever it has to do with it.
So this is the general formula.
Yes.
So what I did is plugged in that this guy's velocity was 1/3 yep. of capital V.
Oh, of capital V, okay.
So I got this.
Yep.
And then remember that capital V was designed so that this thing was 5 meters.
Okay.
Right, because the same equation held. It dropped 5 meters, so capital V over 2G had to be 5 meters.
Okay.
So the heavy guy doesn't go up very far, but the light guy goes up way more than where it started.
Okay. So this is equal to the initial height.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what I was totally missing. Okay.
Yeah, so we could crank it through, but...
Yeah. Okay. And the quiz is on momentum.
Momentum conservation. Okay. On. Oh.